Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, the word is out. They're gonna talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. And if the movie sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 636, A Nobody.
Oh, that is not what we thought you were going to say. Yeah. Oh, man. We were the nobody.
That's how I do it, man. I like to keep everybody on their toes. You're welcome. So I guess before we get too far afield, let's go around the virtual table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Quick shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeart, wherever you find a podcast, you can find us. While you're there, be sure and follow us so you never miss an episode. And you can check out our Patreon, patreon.com/realspoilers, where $5 a month gets you all sorts of bonus content and you help us out. We greatly appreciate that. And our Facebook page, facebook.com/realspoilers, where you can chime in on the latest in pop cultural ephemera throughout the week.
They're going to say the latest and the greatest. And I was like, yeah.
I don't think they make greatest anymore.
No, that's true. They don't.
See, you guys are getting old. When we first started, I was old and you were just like, no, these things are still great. And now you're getting old and jaded.
2020 really did a number on us.
And you're just like, yeah, new stuff all sucks.
Yeah,
there's no
it does
good
suck.
Stuff
true.
Anymore.
It's true.
I don't like it.
It's only going to get worse, man.
I have so many like old man complaints. Like, I hate that new Facebook design. And
yeah. You still bitch about the Facebook design.
I know. I hate that design.
I'm like, okay, Grandma.
Yeah, just, it'll change. Don't worry.
Yeah, they'll
they
change
keep
it
changing,
again. They
always keep changing my Twitter. I don't like this.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I just had to schedule a colonoscopy.
Hey,
so,
better drink that weird thing that makes you poop your shoelaces out.
Yeah. So.
What?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. You gotta
they
like
make you, because they stick a camera up your butt, and so they can take a gander, and and so they need it clean. They need you cleaned out in there, because they go up like about a 2 city blocks, and and so they make you drink this stuff, and it just
it's like a white. Like nitrate, not nitrate, but like it's something like that. Magnesium nitrate? Maybe
something.
That's what it is.
But it's like an enema, but through your mouth, and you just and you just yourself like until you're completely empty. Now I'll
left.
Tell you something. Before I go in for my colonoscopy that day, I'm doing my way in. And,
it sounds terrible.
Yeah, and everything I hear people talk about, they're like, drinking that stuff's the worst. Like, it's because they knock you out, you know.
Right,
right, right.
Which
so
is
that's the only part of it that you really experience is the terrible
right, which
drinking.
Is only polite before you cram something up somebody's ass to give them a
sleep.
Roofie. Yeah, that's the polite thing to do. But So that's what's in my future.
That all sounds right, terrible.
Well,
it'll be like mid to late June.
You know,
so
we should do live
podcast. Live stream it.
Yeah,
maybe for the Patreon members.
It's a pod.
We will lose. We will lose. It's a pod.
Because?
Yeah, we will lose all of our subscribers. That's. That's it. They've lost their minds.
We'll find out who the real fans are.
That's right. Yeah, right.
Yeah, well, that's what I'll do. I'll start an OnlyFans for my colonoscopy.
I mean, I got to tell you, you might make some money.
I don't think I would.
You never know.
I don't think
I
would.
I think there's something for everybody.
I don't.
You may.
I don't think I'm the something for anybody. I found
one person.
Yeah, you found
one. I found one, and I'm just like, I locked that down.
Hanging on for dear life.
And yes. Like,
you just have one subscriber to your OnlyFans.
Yeah. It's getting paid out of my own checking account. Yeah.
Man, Crystal's into some weird.
Pecan?
And that weird is me and my weird.
Pecan?
So, where was I at? Oh, you can find us on Facebook, because why wouldn't you want to after all that? Facebook.com/RealSpoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. The group, if you're hunting it down, is called the League of Show Sharers, and you can also become a real-life League of Show Sharers and get a badge if you draw it out and cut it out yourself by actually sharing an episode. So people who were kind enough to share an episode this week include Librarian Cynthia, Chris Williams, Chris Falls, Lane LeVanway, Travis Tewitt, Ralph Tribble, Brent Smith, Pat Andy, Chris Magic Man, Chris Sanders, Julianne Jordan, Gabriel Lugo, Heather Sachs, Tammy Sherman Powers, Mike and Oscar, the Ozymandias 504, Joey Faubert.
That's not me.
Okay.
Was there a song for that one, Joe? I think you took over those duties, right?
Oh, bullshit.
I did.
You're at best Three Bears. On a good day.
On a good day, that's true, yeah.
Kathia Woods, Geek to Me Radio, Invasion of the Remake, In Session Film, Ronnie Castle, Binge Movies, The Movie Journey, Ryan Terry from the Forza Crowd podcast, Feelin' Film, Matt Neglia, and Colby Mack. So thank you very much, guys, for sharing an episode. We greatly appreciate it. And, I guess there's all that. Let's dig in, shall we?
This is an interesting movie. It's an interesting experiment, I guess I would say, in sometimes guys who work together and kind of create that magic, and when they split apart, the magic is gone. Because it was good. I enjoyed it. It was a good little action flick, but it was not, because this is created by one of the guys from John Wick.
Well, it's created by the writer. It's not either of the directors, you know, because like John Wick was Chad Stahelski and what was the other guy?
I don't know.
The other two.
But the Deadpool guys, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so this one, Derek Kolstad was the writer who created the John Wick universe, you know, and all the world building and everything. And then they just recently, I mean, unrelated to this movie, but they just recently, he said that they don't need him anymore. So like for the fourth and the fifth ones that are planned, he's completely out of it, because like it's just become so big that like they no longer need the creator, which that always sounds like a good idea.
It feels like a move.
Yeah, I mean, why not keep him attached in some? I mean, he built the world, and now you're like, because you know they want to hire some hotshot writer, then whatever. And
why? You don't need a hotshot writer for those movies.
Yeah.
I feel like if you create a movie that is generating five films, you are a hotshot writer.
Right. That's true.
Like,
yeah.
What do you got to do to be a hotshot writer? You just, in today's world, when everything is like, you know, like, hey, can we reboot Please Don't Eat the Daisies? Like, you know, and somebody creates from whole cloth a film franchise. Like, if that's not the definition of a hotshot writer, like, what the F are you looking for?
Right.
Right. I mean, it's also it's the current problem with the Friday the 13th franchise is Victor Miller, who wrote the entire script. Like, Sean Cunningham didn't write the script. Victor Miller did. There's been a lawsuit pending since the mid 2000s about the rights to the series. And that's why we haven't had a Friday the 13th movie since 2010.
Okay. So it's not just, I just thought it was good judgment.
No, come on, man. Okay. Those you make those movies for like 300 grand and they make $10 million. And that, you know,
they make 30 grand.
Yeah, no, they don't. Those movies have always turned a profit no matter how bad they are.
But it's a shame. He said it was like there wasn't like any bad blood or anything, but like the studio was just like, he just didn't get an offer to come back for 4 or 5 or whatever. But I agree with Tom. It's like, that's a crappy move. I mean, he created this, these movies that make hundreds of millions of dollars. He created the world. And we always talk about the world building and how good it is. And so I guess maybe he, I don't know if he saw the writing on the wall and was like, I need to get another franchise, you know, in case they don't renew. He probably knew he had 3 movies, or if this was just a side project, but he clearly is trying to do a similar thing. It's not like as intense with world building, but still like the mythos of this character who has all these skills and is mysterious.
But if you think about it, that first John Wick, it hints at things, but it doesn't spell them out like it does by that third movie. And I feel like this one is similar from a world building detail to that very first John Wick. I mean, you
it's
know,
similar. I guess I would agree without with that. The Continental and all that. Like,
I mean, it doesn't have a lot of this. I mean, look, John Wick world is cooler.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. But he's also, I mean, you know, part of the problem too is, I mean, it is just a variation on a theme ultimately. Mm-hmm. Like
this is pretty much the same premise as.
Yeah. Except now instead of a world of hitman, it's a world of like government
secret agents yeah.
slash spies
right, right.
kind of
no,
thing.
It,
you know what I mean? So
it's almost the same movie beat for beat. I mean, if you think
almost,
about
yeah.
home invasions and Russian mobsters. I mean, he really just and I really liked this movie, so I'm just going to say
I
that
did too.
Up front.
I thought it was
humanizing your main badass killer mm-hmm. by having him like a cute animal
be a dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
like, yeah, the family is the difference, right? So like, you know, nobody, Bob Odenkirk, has a family, where John Wick obviously had the last thing ripped from him, which, you know, his wife had already died, and then got him this puppy. And then when they take out that puppy, that's what spurs it on.
Game over.
And this one right. is more the thought of not being able to protect his family that he has. And then it triggers this thing that's down inside of him that's been buried away for 10 or 12
straw
years
dogs.
Or whatever. Yeah, true.
Yeah, it is kind of like Straw Dogs, yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing is, I think Bob Odenkirk is insanely funny.
Yeah.
And he doesn't do a lot of funny stuff.
See, I thought he was very funny in this movie. Like, the thing that's perfect about this movie, like, the casting, I think, is perfect. If you watch, do you guys watch Better Call Saul?
No.
Okay. That movie is, show is so, so good, and he is so good in it. And he's really doing the same thing, where like in Better Call Saul as Jimmy, he's the same kind of character, right? So like, he's not yuck funny, but he is very charismatic and charming, and he has these funny moments, things happen to him, and it's kind of like that dark comedy, that dark humor. And so he plays that same type of character in this. Obviously, the badass hit whatever skills and all that aren't coming from Better Call Saul, but the stuff when he's not fighting and kicking ass, just the way he carries himself is that kind of down on his luck, like can't catch a break type of thing. And it's funny in those moments, the way that he kind of shrugs things off, and you know, it's just this natural thing where I feel like it's really perfect for this role, and I thought he did great.
Yeah, it's an interesting take on the John Wick stuff, right? Because there's never a moment in the John Wick movies where Keanu Reeves, where John Wick doesn't feel like he could take you out in a second, right? Like, you know, the scene at the gas station when he meets Theon Greyjoy and stuff, like you're all like, oh, okay.
Reek?
Reek. But in this one, that doesn't come until... Like, he goes to the tattoo parlor, and then the guy, you know, he walks in and he flashes the money, and he was like, you know, there's 3 type of people in this world, blah, blah, blah. And then like one of the dudes sitting in the shop sees like two, mm-hmm. like the cards on his wrist, like the tattoos of like playing cards on his wrist. And he was like, oh, thank you for your service.
Yeah.
And like walks behind a door. And I think that I like this
I
scene
love
where
that.
Like he slams a big heavy door, and then you just hear like a bunch of locks, and you see his head pop up. Like where he's just watching.
That's cool. See, I love that. And that's what Derek Kolstad does with his writing, in the same way he built the John Wick mythos with the Baba Yaga and all that. You feel, you don't know exactly what this guy's capable of until you see it, but he does that really cool planting the little seeds and how people react
right.
when they figure out who he is. And I think that's cooler than just walking out with a, you know, like a chest, like a vest of bullets and stuff, and walking out and being like, I'm a badass with all these guns. Like, it's the what you don't know. It's what you don't see that he can do. But you see the reaction and the fear of people that know it. And I think that's a really neat way to build up a character.
Also, Bob Odenkirk doesn't have the brute strength of Keanu Reeves.
That's true.
And
that's
so,
very true.
Like, if he's just like, I, his fights in this movie were all struggles, right? Where
yeah.
if that had been John Wick on the bus with the five Russians, it wouldn't have been a struggle. It would have been a lot of like, I mean, it would have been almost a comedy in terms of like, haha, he's taking these guys out and they're barely getting a scratch on yeah. him, right?
Right.
Where his level of fighting is like, I will win, but it's going to be ugly.
I like, oh, yeah. see, I took that as he was out of practice.
I mean, I think there's that yeah. too, but I mean, he's just not a brute. He's not this hulking, super ripped kind of guy that is gonna believably take down five guys on a bus. It's gonna be a struggle. He can do it because I took it as like his kind of superpower, for lack of a better word, is he can take a blow.
Right.
You know, like he doesn't mind getting hit. Like he will come out the other side and still be able to fight, where somebody else that took that hit would just be like down and crying.
Yeah, I like that. It was more realistic because you don't yeah. in these movies, especially with the heroes, you don't see them really get hurt or take a punch. And I did like that. The fact that he was, you know, they worked in some, because when you're taking on five people, no matter how tactical or skilled you are, I mean, there's other angles and they're going to come behind you and hit right. you with stuff. And so this movie,
there's just quantity.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you yeah, right, right. they don't even have to be good. There's just more.
Right. And you just yeah. don't see that in action movies. And I like how they did it in this. And he just happens to be badass. And like you said, can take a hit, but they actually show it happening, as opposed to like John Wick would be like, he would hold a bus seat behind his head and catch something and whatever, you know, he would just
yeah, right,
he would
right.
catch it all, because and that is badass in a different way. But I really like the fact that it was kind of like you saw him, the more fights he got into, his like repressed memories and skills were coming out. He would take a hit and then it would somehow energize him to get back in there even better. And I don't know, it was cool. I liked how it played differently.
It was kind of the first Die Hard in that way,
yeah.
right?
Like
it, the first
very
Die
much
Hard,
so.
You
yes.
felt the damage. And like that was, and I think that's something that franchise has always lost sight of. It's part of what made that first Die Hard so good. It was really the first of that era of action movies mm-hmm. where you felt the toll that the damage was taking on the hero throughout the film. And you don't really get that in other action movies. And you really don't, I guess you get that somewhat in Die Hard 2, but
you
by
get it,
the third,
I think you get it in Die Hard 3.
But
it's more like they acknowledge that it's there, but you don't feel it.
But remember, see, sure. and we always talked about this with the Fast and Furious movies, because Vin Diesel would ramp a car, fly out the windshield, roll on the ground, catch a helicopter.
Catch a wrench in his teeth.
Yeah. And then he would come out and his white T-shirt was immaculate. And you're like, yeah. that's not cool. Yeah. Like, you no, you would be scratched.
He drove head first into... And Jason Statham's car and yeah. got out okay.
But the
ejects himself through the
yeah.
windshield.
Yeah, right, right. But, that's know, right. That's right.
The
that's
thing
right.
Is, I mean, it's ridiculous, but there's a place for those kind of movies too. It's just, you know, for the most part, that's all we get. And so yeah. when Die Hard was doing that, it was like you just felt the challenge yeah. in a way that you don't feel.
Pulling
it.
Glass out of his feet.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
everything.
The best part about that is, if you look at I'm not going to call it his tank top, it gets progressively grimier and
right.
grimier,
yes.
and then it's gone.
He's
not wearing it anymore. He's just a grimy, bloody, beaten up dude. But that was a great action. That was the everyman
yeah.
action trope that you're right, we don't get anymore. I think, I mean, you know, you can go watch Endgame and Steve Rogers is getting beaten up and he's got, you know, blood coming off of him, but nothing to that level. And I do agree that Bob Odenkirk, this version of John Wick, Nobody, is very much in that Mel Gibson Lethal Weapon, Bruce Willis Die Hard genre, which I've missed a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, that's such
yeah.
a great...
Michael Ironside, who plays the villain, right? He plays the Russian singer guy.
Is that? No.
That's Michael Ironside?
No, Michael Ironside is Connie Nelson's
dad. Who is
dad.
He in this?
Okay, because I was gonna say, holy,
that's
I was
yeah,
like, holy
okay,
crap,
yeah.
that would have been weird.
I just thought I wasn't recognizing him because I didn't recognize him in any role, and I was he's a big enough name. I thought
yeah,
he had
yeah.
a bigger role, but he's got a great quote where he says he likes to play the villains. He doesn't like to play the good guys. He's like, because the good guys get beat up a lot, and he's like, but the bad guy only gets beat up once at the very end.
Yeah,
and he's
true.
Like, it's so much easier to play the bad.
That's
guy.
Funny. I like,
you know,
Michael Ironside.
I would never want to see a yeah. movie with Michael Ironside and Stacey Keach, because I wouldn't know which is which.
That's funny.
That's fair.
But yeah, so I think I've missed this genre of movie where your hero is your hero and he's capable, but he's human. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so seeing Bob Odenkirk, who's a character that who's an actor who I never would have pictured in an action movie.
Yeah. But, you know, the thing is that people lose sight of the fact that everyone thought the same thing about Bruce Willis when Die Hard came out. Like, when Die Hard came out, he was the guy from Moonlighting. He was the charming, fast talker who, you know, just nobody thought he could play the tough guy, which is part of, I think, why Die Hard works so well, right? Is because he's plausible that he's just tough enough, but yeah, barely.
Well, and think about,
you know, and then other, by that last one.
Yeah, no kidding.
And we've seen that with, think about Chris Pratt coming off Parks and Recreation.
That's like Chris Pratt's
and
a good
then, and then becoming Star-Lord, and now, you know, he's Jurassic World, and he's ripped in those movies, and it's like, you know, there's a lot of actors that start in comedy, well, I mean, yeah, comedy specifically with Bob Odenkirk, where... You know, and it's cool, though. I think that's another element of this movie, which, you know, it has that unexpected element of it where you're just like, Bob Odenkirk, and he's great, and I love him and the others, but I didn't know what to expect. And to me, he really pulled it off. Like, whatever, you know, whatever he did to, like, and I know that, like, the action isn't as involved as, let's say, a John Wick movie, but still, like, I think it all looked good enough in the way they put it together, and he was believable enough as this, like, sleeper badass that came out, and
I think if this didn't have the John Wick pedigree, you'd feel a lot, you'd like it.
That's probably true.
It's just hard.
Like, I think you walked in like thinking, I'm going to get John Wick with Bob Odenkirk, and you get kind of that, but also kind of not. And so I think that's, you know, like if this was just, here's the new Bob Odenkirk movie, and you sat down and watched it, you'd have been like,
oh, dang.
This is really cool. Because, I mean, when we saw John Wick, like, we were all, like, all went into that movie just like, this is going to be awful. And
how wrong we were.
Yeah, totally. And it's like, those movies, those kind of movies aren't my thing. And, like, that was a blast. Yeah. And all three of them have been a blast, not an easy feat,
right? Like, it's not an easy thing to accomplish to keep that same momentum through three movies and, I guess, through two more.
Yeah. You know? But yeah, like I think the other thing this movie really benefits from is 90 minutes.
90 minutes in and out. And that's with credits. Like,
it does not overstay its welcome. Yeah, with credits it's 1 hour and 31 minutes, but it does not overstay its welcome. And like by the time it ended, I was ready for it to end. Like I wasn't like I liked this movie overall, but I was just like, this movie does not need another 15 minutes. Like, it's you've done what you wanted to do. You've done it effectively well. You know, there are, especially that last scene, there are plot holes you can drive a truck through. But by that point, I don't care. But I'm like, that's not the kind of movie we're seeing, right? Like, so, like, don't overthink it. Just enjoy
it. It's in and out. It accomplishes what it sets out to do. Like you said, it's great. So let's just talk about the plot, how this is basically this family man with a wife and kids that all kind of think he's, other than the little girl, they kind of think he's just...
Kind of a loser.
Kind of a failure.
And he is kind of a loser, right? Like, it's just he leads a mundane, everyday life. His wife, played by Connie Nelson, they sleep with pillows between them. And I don't mean, like, you know, in between their heads. I mean, like, she's got pillows that separates the bed in half.
Yeah. They drew a line down the room like it was a fight in a sitcom.
You stay on your side. Yeah, and he's, you know, he works as, like, an auditor at a local plant.
Like, machine shop
They don't really say what it is.
His father-in-law owns this place, and so he works with his, you know, his wife's stupid brother and the dad, Michael Ironside, and he just, every day is the same, punch in, punch out.
Make dinner, forget to take out the trash, you know, and then Connie Nelson gives him the guff. And it's interesting, when we get into this, it becomes very apparent that Connie Nelson, like, knew of his previous life.
I feel like she used to be a part of it.
She very well could have been. Or she was just like, she accepted, you know, because there's a scene where she's sewing him up after getting stabbed. And she was like, the line, just like old times.
Yeah, I took it that she definitely knew of it. I mean, the kids don't know anything of it, but she was aware of it. And I don't know. And that's the question when we get to the home invasion. So what triggers his old, you know, skills and all that stuff, is that their house gets broken into and they are just trying to steal stuff, and they hold him and his family at gunpoint, and he doesn't do anything to stop it. And the question,
well, at one point he's got him dead to rights, right? Like, he's walking up, the girl, the son attacks the, it's a guy and a girl, and the son attacks the girl, or the guy, and has him down, and the girl redirects her attention, and Bob Odenkirk comes up behind her with the golf club, but then opts not to do anything, to just let them leave. And so he makes a very conscious choice to not engage.
So that's the question. Is that because he doesn't want them to find out? Is it because he thinks once he does it, he'll get back into a life of killing? You know, I mean, there's just multiple theories, I guess, as to why he doesn't do anything, or is he just that out of practice? Why do you guys think he doesn't do anything?
I took it as he wanted this mundane life, like, you know, like that was his goal. He didn't want to give it up, and he was afraid that any step in that direction would lead to him having to give up that mundane life, you know, because as we'll find out later, like, he very much wanted to be
a
suburbanite, boring 9-to-5-er. Mm-hmm. Like, that he walked away from that world because he wanted this.
But also, he realized that they weren't really a threat, because there's another scene later, I think, where he's talking to Christopher Lloyd, who, sure, well, let's throw, you know,
no, like, he's amazing in this movie.
Yeah, so that was fantastic.
He's always great.
We're gonna talk about that when we got there. But yeah, he's great.
But he's like, they didn't, you know, there were no bullets in the chamber. Like, the gun that they had no bullets.
So he probably would have snapped into action if he had to protect them. But he saw there were none. Yeah.
There were no threats.
There was no real threat, and so
they just let it go.
But I also took it, even before that, like, she had the gun aimed at them, and if he hit her in the back of the head with the golf club, like, she's going to tense up and pull that trigger.
Right.
So even if there were bullets in the gun, like, it still, I don't think, would have been a good move to hit her in the back of the head. Like, it's fun action movie, like, rah-rah, but in real life, you would probably cause her to pull the trigger.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want her to, I mean, if you're going to have her pull the trigger, you'd much rather have her face you, right?
So
then you could maybe do something.
So the son thinks,
depends on how your kid is.
That's true. You know?
Yeah.
The son thinks he's a total screw up. You know, why didn't you do anything? And a loser. And he's already forced with this mundane life. And he's just like, you know, he's just, it's really boring. And obviously he used to do a lot of crazy stuff. And at this point, the breaking point is the little girl. He thinks that the robbers stole her kitty cat bracelet.
Right.
And so that pushes him over
edge. That's game over for this little,
which is funny, right? So, like, that's the humor of it, right? It's a dark.
But it's also kind of a riff on they killed John Wick's dog. Right?
Yes. Totally. Yeah.
It's
kitty
this
cat
little
bracelet.
Tiny thing that's like, that's the
bridge. Yeah. So I think it's a good almost satire, or, you know, a commentary on that. And then I also think that it's very funny, because that's what Bob Odenkirk does. He's totally serious in this situation, but you're like, kitty cat bracelet. So there's jokes like that that play really well, I think, with his delivery and his very understated.
This is the weird kind of in that story. So when I was probably 5 or 6, my dad worked nights, and my house got the house that I lived in got broken into. Two guys came into the house. My mom, my sister, and I were all in the house when this happened. I was sleeping in my mom's bed. I sat up and looked at a person who was not my dad at the foot of my mom's bed. After they broke in, they realized there were people in the house, and they took off outside the house. Cops show up. I'm looking, you know, walking, you know, it's late at night, walking around the house, everybody's awake. And I just happened to find, like, this Dr. Doom figure that I had lost, that somehow, like, these guys must have been, like, rummaging and, like, knocked something over and found it. And I thought, like, when he finds the kitty cat bracelet, I was like, the Dr. Doom figure.
So is that why you chose a life of being a police officer? Because they almost stole
your comic book fan.
Yeah, or comic books, yeah. Yeah, that's exactly why. But
they
tried to
steal my Dr. Doom.
And how dare they try to steal my Dr. Doom figure.
I will never let a criminal.
I'll never let it go. No, I just thought that was funny that when he ends up finding it later, and I was like, Dr. Doom, that's funny.
Yeah.
I did like that it all got, like, put into motion for no reason whatsoever.
Right.
Like,
right.
And also
I
his reaction to that, where he's like, huh, like, What can you do at that point, right?
I mean, he's not even upset about it. He's just like, well, you know, that's going to happen to you.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, Bob Odenkirk is hilarious, and he's really, with Better Call Saul, Tom, it's seriously one of the best shows on TV. I mean, it.
I watch it.
Oh,
I did.
Don't lecture
me. Okay. Sorry. You guys both said it at the same time, and so I didn't know where.
Yeah, no. Don't lecture me.
Like, Joe, seriously, it is so good. He is such a good actor.
Do I need to have watched Breaking Bad?
You don't have to, and it's a prequel, so it doesn't even matter.
It's a prequel, so you don't have to. I mean, I definitely think there are moments that probably play a little better, you know, like when he runs into people from Breaking Bad, but I really do think you could watch it in chronological order. Mm-hmm. But have you not watched Breaking Bad?
Oh, one of the best shows ever made.
Why are you denying yourself?
It's one of those things where, like, it was before I had time to watch it. Like, they were like 4 or 5 seasons in, and I was like, I don't have time to catch up. Well, but now that it's over.
Well, now it's to your advantage because it's not a show you want to wait week to week.
Okay.
For.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, it is literally, it really is one of the best shows of all time. You've got to watch it. But yeah, he's great in this. But so yeah, he sets off on this path, and you know, he ends up finding out that, like, the burglars, they're just common criminals. They're not anything, right? And so, but you know, this sets him off, and then, you know, there's just this sequence of events. Like, this is crazy, but this is a world where you see all the things Bob Odenkirk is doing, and it's just a crazy version of reality. But these Russian mobsters, like, crash their Porsche or whatever it is into a pole.
It was like a Jeep, like an SUV.
Okay.
But yeah.
But whatever, they're driving, and boom, hits the pole, and then they get out of that and get onto the bus that Bob Odenkirk's driving. And so I just like the random kind of sequence of events that plays into this, to where you see that all happen. They get on the bus, and then they start messing with this girl who's just sitting on the bus, and Bob Odenkirk doesn't like that, and he decides to stand up for
this. This was a real, I agree. This is a really good scene.
I will say real quick, I just want to, like, this is the thing I didn't like about this movie, is that his being pulled into this world just feels completely random. Like, one of the things I liked about John Wick is that this world existed, he was in this world, he was out of this world, and then things happen that force him back into that world. Where here, it just, him encountering, like, it just feels so random that he just happens to encounter this huge Russian oligarchy espionage thing.
Right.
It is random, but also I think that, you know, he has these feelings suppressed. The title is a play on words. It has a double meaning. So he became a nobody. And, you know,
but even when he was a somebody, he still had to be a nobody.
Right.
He existed on the periphery, and he had to hide who he was. And, like, the government clearly wouldn't acknowledge that he existed.
And I like and so you have to think that probably over the past 10 or 12 years that he's been out of the game, he probably has come across a lot of things that would have triggered it too. I mean, we're only seeing it because the robbery really awoke whatever it was. And I know that, of course, for it to happen close after, it's a movie, it's 90 minutes. But I like that he probably encountered things and he just sat by and did nothing and watched them happen. And now, because of the robbery situation, how his family looked at him and how he knew that he could have protected them and he feels like a failure, now when he sees something, he takes action. And this is a great sequence on the bus.
It is. Yeah, it's really a guy, especially for a guy that doesn't do action. Like, it looks really good. It's a tight, I know I complain about, like, the tight action shots, but this one works because you're on a bus.
Because they're not using the tightness to hide the action, right? Like, you still
see
the fight choreography. Normally that tightness is just so they can zoom in super close and shake the camera and tell you that something, and they play the sound of a hit and then tell you that that's what occurred, you know?
Yeah. And so, you know, he has this big drag out throwdown fight and he's just totally kicking ass. It's a really good sequence. And then he basically hits this guy in the windpipe and he can't breathe. And so he gives him a tracheotomy. It ends up being that this guy, this punk, the reason why it's a bunch of these Russians driving around their fancy cars and all this, well, he's a Russian mob boss's son. And so,
brother.
Oh, it's his brother. Okay.
Yeah, it's his brother.
It's his brother,
And so, you know, he gets tied up into this world now because he's taken out these guys and his brother.
I like this scene. I like it with the bus driver where she's like, I'm going to call the cops. And he just kind of, like, walks up and, like, Bob Odenkirk just kind of gently like guides her off the bus and then closes the door and then all help. But then he gets thrown out of a window
and he's just like,
she's going to call the cops. He's like, just give me 1 second. Yeah. And then like walks back onto the bus and then all hell breaks loose.
Those are the humorous things. That's the humor that Bob Odenkirk. And if you watch Better Call Saul, although he's not doing the action stuff, but he has this way about him to where, again, Better Call Saul isn't all yuck, yuck humorous, but it is very funny the way that
there are funny moments in. And like it doesn't have the physical aspect, but like he does it more with his mind and his street smarts. Yeah. Right? Like he always has an angle, even if he doesn't have an angle, he'll figure one out on the fly.
Right, slipping Jimmy.
And that's the other thing I think people kind of forget is like he was comedy partners with David Cross.
Yeah.
Like Mr. Show, and then I think did they come back and do something for Netflix?
Bob and David.
Yeah.
Bob and Dave.
Bob and David, and then he was an SNL writer.
But they couldn't call it Mr. Show. Like they had to call it something else.
Yeah, they didn't own the rights, but they can't stop those two from working.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, he's been in comedy for a long time. He has,
like I said on the one, he was almost Michael Scott.
Oh, right.
You know? So Mob Boss shows.
Karaoke.
Which is just, this is the most John Wick scene of this entire movie.
It's just crazy neon
lights.
But it's weird, and like the mob boss is a karaoke singer, and you're like, what is going on here? What does he do? And then someone like questions him of can he take care of business?
That guy's face.
And he just kills some random to him it seemed random, and he's like, that was my best man.
He was like, that was part of the whatever. And he was like, cool, I guess there's more money for us.
He was a 3% stakeholder in the Obshack.
Yeah. Obshack. And he's like, all right, cool. I guess our shares go up.
And so he is the money manager. The Obshack is like, it's the Dark Knight, right? Isn't it like all the mobsters that had all their money by the Asian
investor
guy?
But this is where I'm like, but they hint at the world building, like the first John Wick, right? Like this Obshack, apparently, like it's all the mobsters' kind of savings bundled together, but it moves. Like it never stays in one place, mm-hmm. and also responsibility for it rotates. And because he says, he's almost done with it. It's almost his turn's almost over.
Yeah, he says I've got like 2 days or whatever, 3 days left or with it or something.
I was just gonna say that's the thing about this movie that it's not really wholly original, right? Like he pulls a lot of things, like we've seen a lot of this before.
If they hadn't shit canned him from John Wick 4, there would have been an object. let's not kid ourselves.
But it's effective. I mean, even though we've seen this kind of stuff before especially with John Wick, but then you see like, oh, you know, when he goes to find those two that broke into the house that triggered all this, it's like, oh, they were only doing it because their kid was sick. Like we even saw that just recently in the David Ayer movie. That was the same scene when Shia LaBeouf and the other tax collector. Yeah, and they go in to collect the tax and these guys stole money, but it's like, oh, but our kid has cancer or whatever. So we've seen this and these things in movies.
And we've seen gunplay in a nursing home.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So we've seen this stuff before, but, you know, it really does work effectively, even though it's not like, you know, inventing these things. They use them in a way to build this world and everything where, again, I really enjoyed it, even though I was like in my head, okay, yeah, I've kind of seen this. I've seen this, but it works. You know what I mean? It's a weird feeling when you've like, I've kind of seen this all before.
Here's the problem you're going to run into is everything's going to be done.
It's hard to be
there's
going to
come
original.
Up that we've, yeah. It's 2021, like, right. There's going to come a point where just like, yeah, there's not a lot of, the tropes have all been done over and over.
And I will say this, we did not review this movie, but it's part of what I like so much about that movie, The Father, was like, I felt like I haven't seen this before.
Oh, okay.
Like it was telling a story in a way, the Anthony Hopkins movie.
I think that's the best movie of 2020.
It was really so good. I still think I like Nomadland a little better, but it's really good. And it is you telling a story in a way you haven't seen them tell a story before. And so hat tip to that. But when Kevin, what you're talking about in terms of like we've seen this all before, it's kind of what we talked about last week with Thunder Force, right? That it's like Thunder Force, we'd seen it all before and we wouldn't have cared had it been funny.
Oh, right. This is good. You know? The action's good, so we like it.
Right. So this one is the action is the funny and the action's good. And so you kind of forgive like that last scene, like I had so many questions.
Yeah.
So many questions. Just simple, logical questions. But at that point, I'm like,
But it was cool and it was
just
fun.
Shoot those guys.
Yeah, that's what it really is. You're right. It's even, and the other thing is too, you know, if you thought it's all been done before now, I mean, back when we were growing up, Joe, like the stuff that we were watching had all been done before, but we didn't know it yet. We've
I guess
seen
that's
so
true.
Many
that's
movies now. Like with the stuff that we watched that we thought was so cool, I guarantee Tom would have said like, "Oh, but Abbott and Costello did that." You know what I mean? Like
totally. But going back to when I was a kid, right? Like same thing. Like I loved Raiders of the Lost Ark, but now I realize those it was just the serials from the 40s.
Right.
Right? Like it was, you know, he just spent a, they just took a B movie and spent A-level money on it and didn't leave you with cliffhangers. But, I mean, that's most of those stunts were pulled straight out of those old things. Like, you can go find them. The running from a boulder, the slide, instead of sliding under a truck, it's sliding under, you know, a stagecoach. But whatever, it's all there.
Right.
But when I saw that, that movie came out in, what, 82? So I would have been, like, 11 years old when that came out.
Blew your mind.
It blew my mind. It was new to me.
I mean, everyone is inspired by the stuff that came before them. I mean, that's why George Lucas, you know, reading all those pulpy books and everything, and Steven Spielberg and all them. I mean, they grew up reading these things, whether it be comics or books or listening to stuff on the radio, and then they make stuff, and then we grow up and we watch them make stuff, and people in our generation, these young upcoming directors, you know, they grew up with the stuff we did, and it's all other influences. So I think that's a thing that has happened over and over again. So Tom hits the nail on the head where it's like, but if it's good and it's done well, you forgive it, or you don't say, oh, that was so unoriginal. But if it's bad, you go, that was lazy.
Yeah. And this one is not lazy. The ending bit is Tom's absolutely right. Like, it's ridiculous in every part. Where John Wick, I feel like they set it up to be ridiculous. Like, they give you the reasons it's going to be, right? Like, he's got, like, a suit that's bulletproof, and he's got clips inside the suit, like, ready to reload, but he's constantly picking up, you know. Mm-hmm. So you don't have
and
to ask
this,
the question.
This overarching gentleman's agreement between all of them.
That was really what, like, was so interesting in that movie is the hold the continental, don't fight on these grounds, and that, yeah, they're also like sophisticated in this world, and it's just work, business is business, and
yes. Where this one, the ending fight, you're just like, ooh, okay.
The ending fight's amazing. That makes
it's
movie.
Fun to
it's
watch.
It's fun to watch,
but
if you get
like when the brother shows up, how does the brother know where all, like, you see Bob Odenkirk putting all these things into place, but then the brother seems to know where they all are and how they all work, and then also, like, there's so many kills in this movie that rely entirely on someone happening to stand in the exact same spot where they had preset these. Like, because this ending is basically the ending of the last Rambo movie, right?
Pretty much.
But the difference with the Rambo movie, one, this ending isn't racist, but two, the Rambo one actually made more sense because they were in tunnels,
sure.
Right? So they were kind of trapped as to where they were going to be. So you could kind of plan, like, at some point they will have to stand in this spot, and I can plan a booby trap to take them out. Where this was this big giant kind of open warehouse. Like,
well,
you know, like, it's, I mean, like I said, it's fun to watch, but it doesn't make a lick.
But this is also the ending of Home Alone.
It is absolutely the ending
of
Home Alone.
I mean,
we said the same thing about Rambo.
in the same way that it's
you're
going to go in
the exact
this window and they're going to touch this door knob. I mean, but it's fun and it's well done. And so you don't question, because again, this is a movie, and at some point you have to, it's different when you're watching a biopic or whatever, but you know, when people are so caught up on the realism, I'm not saying you are, I'm just saying that when people,
if this was the final scene of The Godfather, you'd have a different take on
it. You got to realize, like, at some point along the way, like, we, not us, because I think we have a grasp over this, but the collective society got to this point where, I don't know if it was like Nolan Batman movies because they were so grounded or whatever, but
no, it's Bourne.
Oh, okay.
It's Jason.
But
it's
people
start
saying, like,
this
isn't believable.
The first Bourne identity is when they went to this quick cut, like, that's the beginning of this whole.
But it works there.
It does work there.
Because they weren't using it to hide things. They were using it to heighten.
Like the
things.
Impact of each cut was like,
who,
boom.
That wasn't Paul Greengrass, was it?
The first one was.
The first one's not Paul Greengrass. No. He doesn't come until the second one. But
who directed that first one?
I can't remember who directed the first one. But
in my head,
Paul,
I was like,
Greengrass.
Robert Ludlum. I'm like, nope.
That's who wrote the book it's based on. Right?
So the Bourne Identity was Doug Liman.
Oh, okay.
He's an action guy.
Yeah, that makes that tracks.
But that style of fighting, like, because like I was late to the Bourne franchise because just those kind of things don't interest me.
Sure.
And we didn't review it, and so like, and so I saw it like, man, I probably saw it like 10 years after it came out, and like really expecting to be bored.
Doug Liman is making a Live, Die, Repeat, and Repeat is the name of the.
Did he do Live, Die, Repeat?
He did do Edge of Tomorrow, but I didn't realize they had named it.
They've officially called it something
that's
completely
what
different.
Yeah, it says Live, Die, Repeat, and Repeat is the actual official title. I love
that's
that.
Fine. Of the sequel?
Yeah. Edge of Tomorrow was great.
Edge of Tomorrow was great.
Well, when they released it on home video, they re-imaged it as Live, Die, Repeat.
Because everyone called it that because that was the tagline. Yeah. And so,
and it's the better name.
It was called Edge of Tomorrow, Live, Die, Repeat, or whatever. Like they,
right.
Yeah.
Danny Baldwin'd the Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. It was. But at some point, my point is just that like people all of a sudden started thinking that everything had to be grounded in reality.
Yeah.
But there are still movies that can just be movies, and you don't question these things in certain genres like superhero and comic book. And at the end of the day, like what some of these movies become, whether it be the Fast and Furious franchise, like those are now comic book movies, whether you like, you know, not based on a comic book, but they're in the same kind of world where it doesn't have to make sense as long as they own it. And for better or for worse, that fifth Die Hard movie, like clearly they've stopped being grounded, which we loved in the first one. But at this point, it's a comic book movie, you know, and if that's what they're going to own, you can't then say, well, that's not believable because they've clearly aren't trying to operate in this reality as we know it. So, you know, you can't kick back.
I miss those, not even grounded in reality, but like those somewhat grounded in reality action movies where your heroes are not invincible.
I think that's why this one kind of gets back to that, right? I mean, even though he's a badass and he has these skills, but he's taking hits. And I think that's what we really enjoy about this too, is that he's not John Wick. He's not just this flawless fighter and all that, but you know, he's cool in his own way. And, but to go forward, I think just, you know, so this Russian mob boss, which this is kind of like we've seen this in Fast and Furious, right? Like Luke Evans gets in the hospital. Statham's his brother. And I mean, this is mob boss has to take care of his brother.
I do like where the guys are like, you don't even like him. What are you doing? Like, you don't even like your brother. He's like, he's still family.
Which is, again, a trope of every Russian mobster movie. Well, I don't like him, but he's my brother. So we find out that, like, this guy, his file is redacted. He has no record of anything with the government.
To your world building, I think it's funny where the mob boss has like this little hacker gal and she sends a dossier over to the one guy. She's got the feds and, you know, send me everything. So he sends it and then she walks back into the mob boss office and like throws the file down. She's like, don't pay me. I'll see you later. Yeah.
Oh,
take care.
I'm out. That's the same thing as we talked about with the tattoo guys, seeing his tattoo. Thank you for your service and closing up shop. Like that's the world building. That's so cool that they don't have to show you Arnold Schwarzenegger looking all roided out and buff and with guns or whatever. Like, I mean, that's cool in its own respect, but here you've got Bob Odenkirk and it's mysterious and you have people just like closing up shop and getting away from him and want nothing to do with him. To me, that's cool. That's a different kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
That
I agree.
You know, he's badass. She pulls up all his files, like everything is black marker over it. I mean,
it just says
nobody.
That's all
it just says nobody. So I really like how they did all that. And then Christopher Lloyd's his dad and he's in a retirement home and the entire movie he's just like just docile in a chair watching TV.
I gotta tell you that guy has not grown into his ears.
He's 82.
Lloyd's.
Well, your ears never technically stop growing.
Well, it's apparent on Christopher Lloyd because that dude looks like he can fly.
82, man. I mean,
no, I totally
and he's awesome in this movie. He's an awesome.
He's great.
82.
I don't think I've ever seen like the badass Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah, I don't think he's ever done it.
And that's, I mean, Christopher Lloyd's great, and
he always plays crazy.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, it worked here. I mean, when we get to that final fight, and also he's been talking on the phone with RZA, who you're kind of like, okay, they obviously used to work together, used to have some kind of.
Well, this is
his brother.
Yeah, they allude that it's his brother.
I never really picked up on that until I read about it.
Yeah, because you see there's a picture on Christopher Lloyd's nightstand where you see a young Christopher Lloyd and he's got his arm around a, like a, like what looks like a 10-year-old white kid and a 10-year-old black kid, And gotcha. So I'm assuming that at some point he adopted them and raised them.
Gotcha, I thought the twist was going to be the brother was the Russian, the Black Russian. Oh. It was like he was working undercover, and then they killed the Black Russian. I was like, well, I'm wrong.
Gotcha.
Like,
that's that could have been good. Like I
Well, if you knew what RZA looks like, though. I mean, if you know he's cast in this movie,
that's
and
true,
you hear
yeah.
him, and then
yeah.
you see him, he's But anyway, so it all comes down to they end up going to the warehouse, whatever, where the father-in-law and this douchey brother-in-law.
Well, we should say that like the Bob Odenkirk wanted to buy the metal plant, and the father-in-law was like, I need a great offer. So of course he goes and he digs up like this random ass gold. Bob Odenkirk does.
I mean, that
just comes with gold bars.
That's straight out of John Wick.
Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah. It was also like the father-in-law was really good at quickly figuring out the value of a gold bar and how, what that.
So, so if we're going to lean into that Connie Nelson is part of this world, maybe her dad is part of this world, right? Like maybe.
And they did say like he was in the military. He saw action. The brother, because when the kids were talking about writing the paper, he was like, I'll go talk to my uncle.
He was like, I was just an auditor. I never really saw any, you know. When Bob Odenkirk leans into his version, you know, the badass character, and he punches the brother in the chest, and he's just like, you're okay. You're okay. Yeah. Take some deep breaths.
You know he's been
okay.
holding that
breathe
for,
through it.
Yeah. For decades.
Oh, yeah.
He's been wanting to punch that
easily,
guy.
Easily.
So, he buys the place, and then they just rig it.
They home alone it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's just a ridiculous, you think Bob Odenkirk is dead to rights. He's taken out a bunch of people already, but he's, you know,
there's a lot of them. They keep coming. And RZA and Christopher
and
Lloyd
Christopher
show
Lloyd.
Up. And when they go back to back and Christopher Lloyd has a shotgun and RZA's there, like it is such
I
a
I do
cool...
love the line because it was a line that I asked myself where Bob Odenkirk goes, why did you bring so many shotguns? And he just like shrugs.
Yeah,
it's great. Just goes about his day.
And I mean,
it's like, yeah, it's like because it's fun. Yeah.
And Christopher Lloyd, I mean, he is shooting people and they're like flying across the room. It's such a fun action scene.
Oh, we didn't talk about the Bob Odenkirk calls Christopher when he realizes that
when the bad guys go to the nursing home.
Odenkirk calls Christopher Lloyd,
and
he's like, hey, just give you a heads up, like. Things might get a little crazy. And the Christopher Lloyd's just like, cool. And
oh, so
up.
The guy tries to get revenge for his brother by going and getting the dad.
Gets his dad.
And he's sitting there at the TV and he turns up like the war movie or whatever.
Yes, and he pulls back his blanket and he's got a double barrel sawed off shotgun and just blows both of these guys away.
One of them comes in, right? Doesn't the nurse come in and go,
yes,
don't
and he's
have
got the
your...
TV. He's like, God, can you turn that down? He was like, you know, thumbs up as he's choking out another guy like under his arm.
So cool.
And I was like, this is amazing.
Yes.
Amazing.
It is.
So massive fight at the warehouse. And of course, you know, they end up winning the day.
I mean, but he runs at the guy with an explosive strapped to a riot shield or something.
Oh yeah. He's got bulletproof glass.
So that's how he kills the villain is he like protects himself from, you know, it blows him back, but the explosion and shrapnel and stuff hits the Russian mobster. And there's just really cool stuff like that.
Is that called a claymore?
Claymore. It's called a claymore.
Okay. Yeah.
Punisher was on a kick for a while where like they used those claymores. In like every third issue,
they did
claymores.
Isn't that the thing they usually
like with the
they have like
with the front towards
yeah,
enemy
front towards enemy. On,
they have like little legs and you stick in the ground.
Yeah, and you pull a. It's Drew McIntyre's finishing move in the WWE right now. That's what they call.
There you go.
There it is. So. But
that last kill, like even my wife was like, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
That's the word of like the, if you can get her stamp of approval, because she's kind of.
Especially in a movie like this.
That's what I mean. Like when she watches some of the stuff with you and you're like, she hated this movie or whatever.
it was a great last kill. Like I was wondering what they were going to do because I'm like. You know, like it needs to be interesting, but like when he like grabs bulletproof glass, he straps the claymore to the front of it, and then just basically just runs at the guy and pulls the string, and you see it. Like they don't hide it. Like I think they spent about 40% of their special effects budget on this one shot,
right?
And because I also feel like there's some action scenes, like in this scene, there's a lot of like it turns into a bit of a montage to where. Are there some kills that are like implied more than seen?
Yeah.
And like I definitely felt like like there were some budgetary constraints to for what they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And I only say that as somebody who sees a lot of movies. I think if you're not watching with a hypercritical eye, I don't think you'll feel that they cheaped out. But
no, it doesn't look
bad. I can't help
but
no, not at all. But I just can't help but feel that like there were certain things that were like implied rather than shown because they just didn't have the money.
Yeah, sure.
Or the time.
It worked well within their constraints.
It did. They absolutely did.
And
like and
this movie's made double its budget already. I mean, in this
that's
time.
Awesome.
So I mean,
what was the budget?
It was $16 million. And so they've.
That looks great.
That's a good looking movie for $16 million bucks.
And it's already made $32 million in theaters.
In a pandemic.
Yeah, in a pandemic. Like, and now it's out on VOD too. So I'm glad it's making
money. You know, I wonder if the pandemic is going to make studios stop spending so much money knowing that they can make it back. Right? Like we've talked about it forever, where it's just like you don't need to spend $80 million on this random movie, right? Like you just don't need it. So I wonder if when they see something like this where it's like, like it does kind of have a pedigree, right? Like there's a little bit of name recognition attached to it. But
nobody that's going to be like, and I need $20 million.
Exactly.
To do it.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if you got George Clooney or you got Brad Pitt, like, okay, that's a little bit different. You're going to have a bigger budget, but maybe they have seen that this doesn't need to happen. It's the Blumhouse model, right?
Well, like their budgets have ballooned out of proportion, and the thing is this is all going to depend on how many theaters open back up and if people are going to still go to the theaters given that they're used to now all the VOD and the streaming stuff that's included. So
I think the real lasting effect of the pandemic on films
just
to be clear on films will be, I think it's finally kind of knocked the stink off of straight to VOD movies.
I think you're right.
I think people have seen a lot of good straight to VOD movies, or even movies that weren't straight to VOD but perceptually were straight to VOD. Like this technically came out in theaters first, but I think most people's interaction with this movie is gonna be as a VOD thing.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And they're not even gonna really fully realize that this was released in theaters. Mm. And so I think that people are going to be willing to give straight to VOD movies a shot in a way they weren't. But the problem they're going to have is that you can see movies of a similar quality, you know, for free or free-ish baked into your streaming services like Netflix and HBO Max. And so, you know, it's also going to be difficult to get people to pay $20 to watch Nobody. That's 2 months of Netflix, right?
That's true.
Or almost 2 months of
that's
Netflix.
That's a good point.
So, you know, 2 months of Amazon Prime.
But it's two movie tickets, too. So it's like...
There's also that. So, I mean...
Yeah, you're right in the middle
depends
there.
Depends on... Yeah, but it's like... I think this movie was better than anything I've probably seen on Netflix thus far, but...
Pandemic-wise?
Yeah, I mean, I get...
No,
I
think
okay,
that's fair.
It's not better than, like, The Irishman and stuff, but
I think this is on the level of what was that Hemsworth movie that we watched?
Extraction.
Yeah,
I think it's on the level
that
of that.
One.
It was good.
I like this better than Extraction,
nice.
But I enjoyed Extraction. Yeah. But also, what they spent $100 million,
right? Totally.
You know, and so, but I think it's going to be difficult. Like a movie like Extraction or Bright or
what about
was
this better than Cherry?
Yes,
definitely better than Cherry or old guard.
How much money did they spend on Cherry? $200 million or something? Or I don't. Maybe that was an independent one. I don't know,
old guard should have been good, but it just didn't do it.
But it's like this is, like, from an appearance standpoint, like I think this is better than that. But like, if you're trying to decide where to spend your money, like I can definitely see people going, well. But that's 2 months of Netflix, and I get movies kind of like this that are of that caliber.
Right.
But even if they're maybe not as good, that's more just luck of the draw in terms of how things gel.
But, you know,
you know?
You're right. You're 100% right. But here's the other thing. There's so much to watch. There's so much out there. You watch a couple other things on Netflix for a few weeks, and then nobody's going to be $7.99 to own, and you just buy. You know, like there's a stage like for everybody, and it's not like you have to wait that long. So if you are one that loves the new stuff on Disney Plus and Netflix and Amazon, you subscribe to all that, cool. There's plenty for you. There's like multiple things coming out every week. And then, you know, if you want to wait for this one, wait 3 weeks, I would guess, or a month tops, but you're going to be able to buy it for half that price and own it. And then,
that's fair. Like, if you just wait it out, go watch your Netflix stuff and wait for this to drop.
It's not like there's nothing to watch. That's the thing these days.
Yeah, no kidding.
We're so inundated with media that that's the other thing that's changing. People are talking about the shifting theatrical landscape, and I know we've gotten into it all before, but it's not just that theaters are changing and closing and things like that. It's like people aren't going to the theaters not because they necessarily don't like it, but there's so much to tide them over for 4 weeks until that other thing comes on home. It's like, well, if I've got stuff I haven't even finished on my backlog, why would I pay to go see this when I could watch that and wait? You know, it's just, there's so much out there.
There is. A veritable potpourri.
A cornucopia.
I mean, we used to go to the library to do research and look at books, and now, you know, who goes to a library? It's just like things evolve. It's not that...
Librarian Cynthia is so mad.
Hey, they're still out there. They're still good. But, I mean, you got to think. It's like things change, and it's not because a library is bad. Library is great, but convenience. And now you're talking about, do I leave the house and spend expensive money on concessions, or do I wait at home and pop popcorn or make a pizza? And, you know, it's just, it's how things evolve, and it's not to knock the other ones. It's lifestyles are changing. People work from home now. It's just a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely.
And, you know,
but this was a fun movie. Yeah. Like, and like I said, I think 30 minutes was right on the nose. Like I didn't need more. And there were moments that were absolutely ludicrous or made no sense, but you just didn't care because it was
working
along for the ride.
Absolutely. So, like, absolutely.
Yeah. So I enjoyed this. Did not expect to. I mean, I like Bob Odenkirk. And I like John Wick kind of in spite of myself. Like, it's not my my type of movie, but it's good enough that it rises above the genre. But I didn't. I kind of thought this was just going to be like, and
it they pulled it off. They really did. This isn't just a Liam Neeson mocking his Taken movies. You know how he's done a million of those movies. Like, you could see this as being, it's trying to do a John Wick, but it's going to fall way short. And it's like, no, they pulled this off.
Yeah, they absolutely did. So
I long for the nobody John Wick crossover.
Could happen.
Could happen.
Yeah. I don't know. Not if they're not going to let him.
I guess that's true.
Five.
They're like, no. This is mine now.
Oh, true. Yeah. This is mine. Well, show me the money.
I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the virtual table and everyone can say where to find
me. This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21. Also, I want to shout out to Alex Carlo, who is one of our UK listeners. I got your comics back in the mail. So they're coming. I'm going to get them back. I don't know. I screwed it up, I assume, as far as like I didn't put the right stuff because it's international shipping. Right. I screwed it up. But your comics are coming back.
Oh, geez.
So there you go.
Sorry, Alex. You better throw in a couple extra.
I very well.
Yeah.
I probably will. Yeah, I'll figure something out.
Throw in a Dr. Doom figure for the game.
No.
Do you still have that like in a glass case?
I don't. It sucks because that was like. No, I don't.
That should be your Scrooge McDuck's dime.
It really should. It should be my penny or whatever. Yeah.
No, it should be his dime.
Oh, it was a dime. That's right.
No, I just told you. Don't say penny. I told you dime.
I do have the first figure I ever owned, though.
Do you? What is it?
Yeah. It's a Superman, like superpowers from like 1985, I think. Hmm. Yeah.
Cool.
I bought it.
We were cleaning the house yesterday. I found an SD card, and I was like, well, I should probably see what's on this. And I had like pictures my sister must have scanned in or something, like from my childhood. And
so that's cool.
I had a picture of me when I was probably like 16 or 17 years old, and then I had another picture of me like where I was 20. And I thought it was funny, the picture where I was 20, I was wearing a Mickey Mouse hat and a Mickey Mouse sweatshirt.
Cool.
And then the picture when I was 17, I was like Christmas morning, I was opening gifts, and I had a Monkees concert T-shirt on, and I'm like, I am nothing if not consistent.
You're the same person.
Except for the hair, I have not changed.
That's pretty awesome.
Well,
yeah, I just thought it was funny.
This is Kevin. You can follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online, facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group, and of course, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/Real real spoilers. So what is next week? I feel like it's a
Mortal
big one.
I think it's Mortal Kombat. Dun, dun, dun,
oh, dun, 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 dun. I've never seen a Mortal Kombat.
Oh, buddy. We might have to
go
back.
I've never played
and...
Mortal Kombat.
Oh, really?
Sacrilege.
I like don't care about this at all. It'll be interesting to see because like no fan service will make any
That's
amount
a good
of sense
point.
To me.
That's a good point.
Like, yeah. like none of it good. Will mean a
don't,
thing to
don't
me.
Don't play the game. I mean, not that you would, but don't play the games. Don't watch don't the old movie what... to prepare. Like, just go right into this one. I know.
You thought I would prepare
I know. That's
for
why
a Mortal Kombat movie? Like, that's cute. No, I cool. just, it'll be interesting because, like I said, I've never really liked the fighting games, and this is like the era when the video games, like, there were too many buttons.
Sure.
And I was like, I don't care anymore. And
you need that paddle that just goes up and down and hits the ball.
Oh, man, those are the best, man. The Atari the Atari joystick, one stick and a button. It was like holding your... and like, that's, I already know how to do that. That's my speed. When there's like 45 buttons and like, it's too much. I don't need a part-time job. I've got three podcasts. So anyway, that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, John adopts a pit bull.
Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice because we already warned you. Better watch out. It's going to ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.